This is Free Speech Radio News for Thursday, June 9, 2005, from KPFK in LA. I'm Aura Bogado. The House of Representatives debates a resolution calling for the U.S. to withdraw from the WTO. Consumer rights groups question the high fee of banks' overdraft charges. And protests continue in Bolivia. We'll check in on the ground with La Paz. All this and more after these headlines.
I'm Randy Zimmerman with the headlines for Free Speech Radio News. Some U.S. representatives are seeking to slow down the quickly diminishing national pension fund as corporate giants cash in employee accounts to stave off the consequences of bankruptcy. Kate Paulman reports from D.C.
House Budget Committee members are trying to curb corporate abuse of employee pension plans by requiring employers to fully fund all plans within 7 years and provide more objective reports to employees. At today's hearing, Massachusetts Congressman Democrat Richard Neal says that the abuses have gone on long enough.
Now we find ourselves here with the pension problems that we have, and in some measure it's a reflection, I think, of the lack of will by the Congress to do what they're supposed to do, and that is to ask questions. The current Congress goes along with everything the administration says.
United Airlines bankruptcy spawned the proposed changes when the Pension Budget Guarantee Corporation was ordered to absorb $5 million of United's pension. Still, over $3 million in benefits for United's employees have been lost. The pension changes proposed today will likely be added to the broader House bill on Social Security. For Free Speech Radio News in Washington, D.C., I'm Kate Paulman.
Another round of strikes by hotel workers started today. Kelly Barnes with the People Without Borders Collective at KPFK in Los Angeles has more.
Workers at the Hyatt Hotel in West Hollywood went on a 2-week strike early this morning over payments collected from them for health care that workers say were illegal. Today's walkout of Hyatt workers will most likely be followed by workers at other high-end LA hotels if these charges are not settled and payments returned. The union has been in negotiations with the hotel for over a year. According to an officer with Unite Here Local 11, Tom Walsh, hotel management simply began to implement their contract proposals in an attempt to get the unions to accept them. Those proposals included forcing workers to pay a copay for their health insurance. Walsh says the demand is illegal and impossible for low-wage earners.
The majority of the members of our union are still low-paid workers, and the free family health benefit that we have is the most important benefit for us. And as a result of them starting to charge people for that benefit, lots of people couldn't afford that copay and therefore lost their family health insurance coverage.
Walsh maintains the union will continue to protest on this issue until it is won. For People Without Borders in Los Angeles, I'm Kelly Barnes.
The Philippine military steps up security in the capital as they seriously consider fresh rumors of a coup plot against the president. Gurley Lee now reports from Manila.
A taped conversation allegedly between President Gloria Arroyo and an election official about fixing the vote in the May 2004 elections has sparked new coup warnings in the Philippines. While the government has dismissed the recording as a fabrication, it is casting doubts on Arroyo's victory as opposition leaders again accuse her of cheating. The timing of the recording's release could not have been worse. The Senate has been holding public hearings on accusations that the president's husband, eldest son, and brother-in-law were receiving kickbacks from illegal gambling operators. One witness has testified that she personally delivered money to Mrs. Arroyo's son and brother-in-law, who are both elected members of the House of Representatives. Other witnesses say they have heard of similar payoffs to Arroyo's husband. For Free Speech Radio News, I'm Gurley Lino in Manila.
Human rights groups in Montreal and Toronto held 24-hour vigils against Canadians being deported to face torture in other countries as the inquiry into the case of Maher Arar continues. Kristen Schwartz has more from CKLN in Toronto.
Maher Arar, a 34-year-old Syrian-born Canadian citizen traveling on a Canadian passport, was arrested at a New York airport in September 2002. After questioning him about alleged links to terrorist groups, the United States deported him to Syria, where he was imprisoned and tortured before being returned to Canada a year later. A public outcry forced the Canadian government to investigate to what extent Canada cooperated with the U.S. in the deportation. Last week, the inquiry heard evidence that Canadian security officials preferred that Mr. Arar remain in Syria, At the same time, former Foreign Minister Bill Graham testified that the U.S. refuses to allow Canada a veto over U.S. decisions to deport Canadian citizens to third countries. A report from the hearings is expected in the fall. From CKLN in Toronto, this is Kristen Schwartz for Free Speech Radio News.
The capital of Ethiopia was mostly locked down today after yesterday's riots over May elections. At least 22 people were killed as police fired into crowds of protesters, who were primarily students. Protesters who broke a government decree against public demonstrations said the ruling party rigged legislative elections. Also, several hundred people have been arrested over the past few days. Ethiopian government officials said election results will be held up another month until sometime in July. Human Rights Watch researcher Chris Albin-Lackey says the opposition party did better than expected.
Most people going into the elections believed it was almost impossible that the opposition could win, but then most people also believed that it was impossible the opposition would do as well as it already apparently has done.
Lackey also criticized the U.S. and U.K. response to the situation.
I actually think it's very ironic that as Blair and Bush announced their professed commitment to increases in aid on good governance, they were using as an example a country whose government was at that very moment engaged in firing on crowds of innocent demonstrators in the streets of the capital.
I'm Randy Zimmerman for Free Speech Radio News.
The chair of the Federal Reserve Board, Alan Greenspan, told a congressional committee today that the economy was on firm footing and that interest rates could continue to rise to keep pace. But Greenspan also indicated that the ever-increasing divide between the rich and the rest of society is a threat to both U.S. democracy and capitalism. Meanwhile, the House of Representatives debated a resolution calling for the U.S. to withdraw from the World Trade Organization. Supporters of such a withdrawal say the divergence in wages between the rich and the rest can, in part, be attributed to what they say are WTO policies that support the bottom line of multinational corporations. Mitch Jezerich reports from Washington.
The stock market rose today after Chair of the Federal Reserve, Alan Greenspan, said that the economy is on firm footing, while his statement on the increasing gap between the haves and haves not didn't seem to put a damper on stock traders' bullish moods. But Greenspan says it's something the country needs to address.
There really is a very substantial difference in the labor market, where the 80% of the non-supervisory workers' wage increases have been relatively modest, and indeed, if you deflate it by the consumer's price index, it's actually negative. We have a very significant divergence in our labor market, which has consequences we need to address sooner rather than later.
In a period in which worker productivity has significantly increased, we would think that the middle class would be better off.
Independent Representative Bernie Sanders of Vermont tried today to address the raising gap. He blames much of the disparity on free trade. Sanders brought to the House floor a resolution calling on the United States to withdraw from the World Trade Organization.
The economic reality today, as every American knows, is that the middle class of this country is collapsing. Poverty is increasing, and the gap between the rich and the poor is wider today than at any time since the 1920s.
Sanders says he knew the resolution would be voted down, which lost by an 86 to 338 vote, but his intention was to send a clear message to the Bush administration, which Sanders says has been lax towards workers' issues under the WTO. Supporters of the resolution included both Democrats and Republicans. One of the Republicans was Ron Paul of Texas.
It does not endorse free trade whatsoever. It endorses managed trade, and too often it's managed for the privileges of the very large, well-positioned companies.
Democratic Representative Carolyn Kilpatrick of Michigan, where General Motors has just laid off 25,000 workers, is like many Democrats who criticize the WTO, but say the U.S. should remain with it so to make it better.
I represent General Motors, and this week they announced closing of more plants, dislocating more workers, and at the same time put $2 billion in China last year. So I say stay in the WTO, make it better. This is a world economy, and the U.S. is the most powerful.
WTO rules support corporations to move their operations from one country to another in search of the cheapest labor and the least government regulation.
Democratic Representative Maxine Waters of California supports the withdrawal.
A corporation that does not want to pay a decent wage can simply move its factory to another country. If workers in that country organize a labor union, the corporation can move the factory to a third country.
But Republican Representative Paul Ryan of Wisconsin says U.S. workers could compete with other workers if U.S. companies were given a break.
We can address health care costs. We can address the fact that we tax our businesses and our jobs more than any other country in the world save Japan. We can address tort costs, regulatory costs, have a comprehensive energy policy to make energy more affordable.
Next week, the House votes on a measure that could cut UN funding by half. That measure is likely to pass. Mitch Jezerich, Free Speech Radio News.
A bomb exploded outside of a Hilton hotel that also houses a branch of Citibank in Guayaquil, Ecuador, yesterday, shattering windows and causing structural damage. No injuries were reported. The People's Combatant Group, or GCP for its Spanish acronym, took responsibility for the blast in opposition to the 10th round of free trade talks being held in Ecuador between that country, Peru, Colombia, and the United States. The GCP maintains that free trade will ruin the working classes, lead to greater unemployment and poverty, while benefiting banks and U.S.-based multinationals. The group targeted Citibank in particular, calling it the Yankee Vampires. Meanwhile, in the United States, overdraft protection for checking accounts called courtesy loans are causing cash-strapped consumers more than traditional contractual transfer protections and are reaping big profits for the banking industry. According to consumer interest groups, the vast majority of big banks are moving into these more expensive overdraft protection programs while hiding the true costs from consumers. Jenny Johnson reports.
High-cost, short-term loans are being made without consumers' direct consent by the majority of big banks in the form of new overdraft protection programs. In place of the traditional formal programs such as line of credit or linked account protections, consumers are increasingly enrolled in fee-based programs.
All the data we've seen indicates that if a financial institution adopts one of these programs, the number of overdrafts is going to increase 50 or to more than 100%. So these programs definitely generate more overdrafts.
When a customer overdraws his or her account, the bank pays for the transaction and charges the customer $20 to $35 for the service. In addition, these programs allow customers to overdraw their accounts at the ATM and through debit card purchases. Eric Halperin, the author of a new report on the subject, explains how banks are implementing the overdraft courtesy loans.
Some institutions do it through advertising the program, but other institutions successfully increase the number of overdrafts without advertising, and that's simply by changing their policies, where in the past they may have rejected checks and not paid them. They will start just regularly paying checks, and through that, consumers understand that this is now a credit program that they can access like a line of credit.
The rise in cost of overdraft protection via courtesy loans is coupled with consumers' ability to inadvertently overdraw their accounts in new ways. Jean Ann Fox is the author of a report on the issue for the Consumer Federation of America.
Part of the reason that this is becoming such an expensive thing for consumers is that not only are the fees going up and are the highest at the biggest banks, but there's so many more ways you can overdraw your account now than it used to be possible to do.
Altogether, big banks are profiting $10 billion a year in fee-based overdraft loans, according to industry estimates. Federal regulations are playing a role in the ability of banks to collect such fees, according to the groups. Eric Halperin explains.
An overdraft loan, if you translated that fee into an APR, could have an APR of easily three digits and in some cases four digits. Your line of credits are usually under 18%, and cash advances from the credit card companies, even on a higher interest rate credit card, are going to be much below the APR for an overdraft loan.
Consumers should choose not to participate in the courtesy loan programs and pursue more traditional types of protections, says Jean Ann Fox.
But we think it's much more appropriate for consumers to apply for and get real overdraft protection at a much lower price for their guarantee that the bank will cover, you know, any check that might overdraw your bank account, rather than just be hit with these high fees each time you do it.
Jenny Johnson, Free Speech Radio News.
Violence continues in Iraq today. At least 49 Iraqis were kidnapped near the Syrian border, and four U.S. soldiers were killed in attacks north of Baghdad. South of Baghdad, in an area that has come to be known as the Triangle of Death, Iraqi and U.S. troops have been sealing off towns, raiding them, and conducting house-to-house searches. Meanwhile, top Sunni Arab leaders have demanded major representation on a 55-member committee to draft the Iraqi constitution. At a news conference in Baghdad, Shia and Kurdish groups who currently dominate the committee have announced that they are interested in working with Sunnis to achieve sovereignty and security in Iraq. But Sunnis, who have been excluded since they boycotted elections in January, are threatening to boycott the process if their demands are not met. Eliana Kaya has the story.
Sunni leaders are demanding at least 25 seats on the committee drafting the Iraqi constitution. They are threatening to boycott the drafting process altogether if their demands are not met. Currently, the 55-member committee is dominated by Shia and Kurds, the two groups that gained the most seats in the January elections. But most Sunnis boycotted the elections and are now underrepresented in the Iraqi National Assembly. Sermad Abdil Karim, a political analyst and the head of the Iraqi News Media Agency, points out another perspective.
This constitution, if it is not based on popular support, and if it doesn't represent the majority of the Iraqi population, won't be a successful constitution at all. The main problem in Iraq is that this election is not legitimate, mainly because many Iraqis didn't participate. So the Constitutional Committee does not represent Iraqis, and therefore it is not legal. It only represents the parties that participate in this committee. It doesn't represent the Iraqi people.
It is not yet clear whether Sunnis that would be included would have formal voting power to approve or reject the initial draft. But Sunni inclusion in the Iraqi political process is seen as an important step. The committee, which currently only has two Sunni Arabs on it, is set to present a draft of the constitution by mid-August. While the Iraqi National Assembly could delay the deadline for up to 6 months, the United States is pressing the Iraqi government to stay on deadline.
The law submitted by Bremer, called the Friedman Law, represents American interests in the Iraqi constitution. They made this law with the intent to control the Iraqi constitution and to create a situation where they are in position to keep their troops in the country and maintain control of Iraq.
Many Iraqis do not accept the current situation. They reject the idea of this constitutional committee. They think it will instead lead to a divided Iraq.
This situation in Iraq is unique. It has no historical precedent. The system that they are using to create a basis of an Iraqi government is wrong, and this constitution will never survive. It will only lead to more problems. It will divide Iraq into many smaller counties. The old Iraq will be gone if we continue on this way. From my connections with Iraqis, from conversations and meetings with them, they are rejecting writing the Constitution this way. They believe that the groups now writing the Constitution are composed of people who have come from outside the country, especially the parties that are based on religious and ethnic identity. Iraqis believe that Iraq will only survive if it is unified.
For Free Speech Radio News, this is Eliana Kaya.
In Bolivia, the National Congress is still attempting to reach an agreement to accept President Carlos Mesa's resignation. The special session in Congress should decide an outcome by this evening. For weeks, tens of thousands of protesters have been demanding the full nationalization of oil and gas, the resignation of Carlos Mesa, who tendered his resignation to Congress this week, and the total closure of the National Congress with a call for early elections and a constitutional assembly. We're joined on the line by independent journalist Luis Gomez, who is in La Paz. Luis, can you tell us what the scene is like on the streets of La Paz?
There are a few demonstrations in the streets. We're talking about, a few thousand people, some of them peasants from south of the country, and some of them small retailers from La Paz. And the main worries right now is that water is going to be cut next Monday if we don't have supplies. And it's a tense calm. There's no gasoline. There's some food starting to end, and water might be cut next Sunday.
The military says it's ready to preserve the country's so-called unity. We've heard rumors about a possible coup for weeks. How likely does that seem to you now?
The military troops in Bolivia have declared they are going to preserve Bolivia's unity, and they're going to respect what Constitution says about succeeding Mesa in power, which might be interpreted by like they're going to respect whoever takes power in Bolivia, and they're not going to act against the social movements or the people from Santa Cruz if they don't get an order from the president, whoever he is.
Can you talk about the differences between the broad social movements and the people in the Santa Cruz province?
The social movements in Bolivia are asking for nationalization. They're demanding that every natural resource in Bolivia has to be owned by the state as the constitution states.
Brazil says they may be facing a cut to natural gas due to these protests in Bolivia. Winter is coming and energy rationing will be difficult. What can we expect from these neighboring countries and also from the Organization of American States?
I can't imagine how Brazil is having cuts of its gas supply from Bolivia. They're working already, and nobody has taken Petrobras or the gas pipelines at all. I have no idea and clue why are they telling that. From the Organization of American States, I don't know what we can wait. As you saw 2 days ago, Latin American countries rejected the proposal of made by Condoleezza Rice of somehow intervene in Bolivia with military troops. I don't know what we might expect. What can I tell you is if any troop or any country, neighbor country, will try to intervene somehow, Bolivian politics, the movements, the social movements, especially in the west part of the country, will be more angry. And they're not going to allow no foreign troops or no neighbor country to intervene in his own business.
We've been speaking with Luis Gomez, an independent journalist in La Paz.
George Bush hailed Turkey as a democratic example in the Middle East as he met with Prime Minister Recep Tayyip Erdogan at the White House yesterday in what's being described as a global kiss and makeup session after the Turkish parliament's refusal to allow the United States to launch a northern front against Iraq in the spring of 2003. FSRN's Aaron Glantz reports.
It was a shining moment for Turkish democracy. On March 1, 2003, hundreds of thousands of Turks took to the streets of Ankara against the coming war on Iraq. To everyone's surprise, the demonstrators won the day. The Turkish parliament sided with the vast majority of Turkish people and voted against allowing the U.S. military to launch a northern front from Turkish soil. The Bush administration was not pleased. Zeynep Tufe is with the Institute for Public Accuracy in Washington.
U.S. is angry with Turkey because it listened to the overwhelming majority of its public and said, no, we're not going to take part in this war. We're not going to be a staging ground for it. Which for it was a quite an interesting democratic moment for Turkey to be able to do that. But as usual, these things come at a cost.
Relations have gone further south since the invasion, and as the occupation drags on, anti-American sentiment among regular Turks has grown. In addition, most Turks are opposed to American intervention in Syria or Iran, an issue addressed by Prime Minister Erdogan in an interview yesterday with National Public Radio.
Let's not forget that in our relations with our neighbors, we foster democracy, freedom, the rule of law, and human rights. We want to have warm relations with our neighbors in this framework. The only way to address these issues is by discussions.
Human rights activists back in Turkey remain concerned that their government will compromise on war with Washington. They're also concerned about Turkish demands that they be allowed to attack the Kurdish guerrilla group, the PKK, which remains holed up in the mountains of northern Iraq. Sana Yurtapan is the founder of the group Freedom for Expression in Turkey. He is one of 100 prominent Turkish thinkers who signed a petition today for peace in Turkish Kurdistan.
We are really
afraid that at the end there will be a new attack in northern Iraq against PKK and a lot of blood will be shed. PKK had a unilateral ceasefire for a long time. At the end, they had to stop it, but they were not attacking. But on the other hand, Turkish army was attacking on them. And then when they defend themselves, and naturally both sides kill each other, and then all of a sudden in Turkey, you say that, look at PKK is attacking again. Well, if they are attacked, normally you must expect that they will try to do something, not just wait that you come and kill them.
Yurtapan says the Turkish army's insistence on an armed attack on the PKK is absurd because the Kurdish guerrillas in Iraq are willing to disarm if they are given amnesty to come back to Turkey and return to civilian life.
If Turkish army stops attacking, then the others are ready to come down from the mountains. Naturally, they want to have some basic rights and cultural rights, etc. But unfortunately, Turkish state, mainly military, still insists on just thinking the military way. I'm about to win, so why not kill all of them?
More than 30,000 people, mainly Kurds, have been killed since 1984 when the PKK began its armed campaign for an independent homeland in southeastern Turkey. For Free Speech Radio News, I'm Aaron Glantz.
A small group of peace activists assembled in Bonny Doon, California, early this morning outside the main gate of Lockheed Martin, the world's largest weapons contractor. Located behind a wrought iron gate and barbed wire fences on 4,400 acres of pristine woodlands in rural Santa Cruz County, sits a sprawling complex of warehouses and laboratories. The facilities are used to test components and subsystems of the U.S. Navy's Trident II missile. Vinny Lombardo reports.
Can we offer you some coffee cake this morning? Can we offer you some coffee cake this morning?
Once a month in the early morning hours, Linda Marin and a small number of activists gather outside Lockheed Martin's Santa Cruz County site, hoping to dialogue with employees who arrive there for work. 2 years ago, Marin founded Communities Concerned About Lockheed Martin, or CALM, who want the company to publicly disclose what is currently being produced and or tested in Bonny Doon and the environmental effects of its past and present projects there.
We're concerned about the safety of transport of hazardous materials up and down the roads. We're concerned about what kinds of protocols are in place should there be an accident. We can't seem to get really any clear information about what that is. And we're certainly concerned about contamination on the premises.
The Lockheed Martin facility in Santa Cruz County began operations in 1957, but didn't receive a hazardous materials permit until 1983. Chip Manor is strategic relations rep for Lockheed Martin.
I can assure you there are no radioactive materials in use there. No weaponry has ever been produced there. And the chemicals that are found there are very comparable to what you would find in a hardware store.
Well, I'd say rocket fuel is pretty dangerous substance, so I know that's up here.
Gene Patterson has been protesting outside this facility since the mid-1980s and says people living nearby have a right to know the work Lockheed Martin does.
Because a lot of the land is owned by the military, they are not subject to the same kinds of standards as everybody. And so I think that's wrong. I think they should be held accountable.
Officials at Lockheed Martin have made a non-binding agreement to engage in dialogues with CALM activists. Their decision is expected by June 15th. Vinny Lombardo in Santa Cruz for Free Speech Radio News.
You've been listening to Free Speech Radio News. I'm Aura Bogado.